Hello and welcome. My name is Doug Wheeler, and this is From the Belly, a podcast proudly hosting rare, remarkable people who shape the world we live in. Our purpose is to strengthen the bond between reflection and action. And today I am joined by Don Hudson. And Don, welcome to From the Belly.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's about 12:30 here in the Seattle area. And Don is 9 hours ahead because he is in a hotel in Croatia. Is that correct, Don?
That's right, yeah.
All right, man.
And it's wonderful, too.
Okay. Well, Don, let's just start with, we know that you live stateside, but what takes you to Croatia at this time in your journey?
Well, you know, the main thing that I usually say about myself when I'm doing something like this, and by the way, thank you for inviting me to join you for this, but I'm a professor of religious studies at King University in Bristol, Tennessee, and I run the Bible and Religion department. And I'm going to say this, I don't usually go around saying this, but just to give a context for what we're going to talk about in a few minutes, my PhD is in Hebrew Bible. And it's not in Judaic studies, but I have a doctorate in Hebrew Bible, and I've dedicated my life to studying Christianity, studying the scriptures, but I focused on the Hebrew Bible. And so Israel, the Hebrew Bible, so forth, these have been interests for me for over 40 years now, hard to believe. So I teach King University, and then my wife is with the Department of Defense in Wiesbaden, Germany, and we actually live in Germany, and I commute back and forth. You know, it's 2021. I commute back and forth. I teach the fall semester and come back, and then I go back to the U.S. and teach the spring semester and come back. And of course, now with technology and, you know, education, a lot of people are upset about this, but it's changing. It's going more digital. And I tried to catch that about 20 years ago. I kind of thought things might change. And that really paid off during the pandemic. So I live in different worlds, and
yes,
we're on vacation, and we've come to Croatia to fly fish for 3 days, we hope.
All right. I was going to, on your professional resume, you already spoke about being a professor at King, and you also talked about, well, I'll read it here, research fellow at Palestinian History and Heritage Project, the University of Copenhagen, educational advisor at U.S. Department of Defense in Germany, and then the former fly fishing guide of professional fly fishing in Blue River, Colorado. So
we could talk. That's the most important one.
That's the most important one. And you know, just for the listening audience, Don and I have been friends for over 30 years. I met Don in Winona Lake, Indiana. I had just enrolled in the counseling program there, and Don was studying at Grace. You were studying what?
Old Testament.
Okay.
I was doing a THM in Old Testament at the time. Hebrew studies. Yeah.
And I don't remember the first, second, or minute that I met Don, but I know that we made a connection. And so we hung out in those early days, and I dated Lori, and Don dated one of Lori's best friends, and we got married and whatever. And then we lived in Colorado for a period of time together. But it's been a while. So yeah, I got it wrong that Don doesn't actually live here in the States any longer, but he comes here. So this is really a beautiful reunion for Don and I. You know how life just takes you in different directions. But I pursued Don for this topic of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict because it's been so troubling for me, let's say the last 10 years. And then this recent uprising just brought it to the forefront for me. And I think this is true, Don, and I think you would know this. There's so many folks like me that just, I mean, we know what we know, but we know we don't know much.
Right.
And we don't really know even how to have a conversation with anybody about it. And things are so tense right now. You make a statement that sounds like it's anti-Semitic, and then it goes a different direction, and that's not what you mean to say, or that person didn't mean to say it, and you try to pull it back, and then it goes the opposite direction. So it's really difficult. But I can just say that it's been very troubling and painful to watch and look at the pictures. And Dawn has been very honest on Facebook, so that's how I reached out to Dawn. Dawn, I think we'll just start with something as basic as, could you define Israel for us?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really interesting. We're going to have to define a few terms to even talk about this. And this is why people can't even talk about it, because we're not even defining our terms, or the narrative has already been decided. And so, Doug, like, you're actually rare in that you do say you don't know what's going on over there. Most people think they know what's going on there, and they don't. And I don't mean that in an arrogant, cynical way. But I, especially 12 years ago, I started going to Israel in support of Israel and Tel Aviv University and a dig there. And, you know, the whole narrative over there is, don't go into the West Bank. Don't go into the West Bank. It's dangerous to go. The Palestinians are dangerous. The Palestinians are terrorists. And, you know, one of these days, maybe I'll grow up, but it's like, tell me not to do something. And so I started going back there, and then I started meeting and staying with Palestinians that I just fell in love with. And there's a little village called Taibe, right outside of Ramallah. And that's where my wife and I stay when we go there. Mm. And it's a whole village, and I'm going to come back and define Israel, but it's a whole village of Palestinians. And they're all Christian. They're not Muslim, they're Christian, and I love my Muslim friends, but a lot of people don't understand that Palestinians are Christian. And so this whole village is Christian, has three churches, and the folks that are my dear friends, they're actually the only beer brewers in the Middle East. They're Arab,
wow,
Palestinian, Christian, and they're known, they're very famous for their beer. Now, one of the terms that we have to define is Israel, which sounds like, you know, so simplistic. But why did Israel, the government, why did Israel choose the name Israel in 1947? And of course, 1947 to the Palestinians is called the Nakba. It's the tragedy. 600,000 Palestinians were driven out of their homes. And Israel establishes its state in 1947. They call it the independence, the War of Independence. Palestinians call it the catastrophe of the Nakba.
Yes.
Why did they choose Israel? Because if you go back in history, and of course everybody does on this, you have to. You go back in history, and the Jews, they lost their temple, they lost Jerusalem at the hands of the Romans in 70 CE, 70 CE or AD. And they were driven out of their country. And they actually ended up north, and the only sect of Jews that survived were the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were dedicated to the Torah, not the temple. So, but they were Judeans. And one of the things that we have to understand is a lot of people throw Israel and Judah into the same pot and mix it all up. And you can't do that historically. You cannot do that academically, because Israel and Judah were essentially two different nation states. And you see this in the Bible in kind of the background. David hated Saul, or Saul hated David, and they warred against one another, really. Why? Well, Saul was Israel, and David was Judah. And so the most interesting thing, this is why I'll make my point and shut up, but this is why, Doug, it's very important. Israel disappeared in 721 BCE.
Mm-hmm.
They've been gone for 2,700 years. They were wiped out. And people talk about the lost 10 tribes of Israel. That's it, right there. What we're finding out archaeologically and historically is most good scholars think that there was a migration of Israelites who came down to Jerusalem, came down to Judah. Judah will survive the Assyrians, and you see this in the book of Jeremiah. They will survive until 586, and then they fall to the Babylonians. But then they will come back, and they will rebuild, and they call themselves Judea. And so Israel, it's kind of interesting. Why would modern day new state, 1947, call itself Israel? Why not Judea? And the answer is, it's very political.
Mm-hmm.
They're essentially owning the history. If they take on Israel, they're seeing their roots not going back to 70 CE, but all the way back to Saul and David, which is 3,000 years. And so you look at arguments on the internet, the pro-Israeli perspective is David and Solomon, David and Solomon, David and Solomon, because they want to go back 3,000 years with this. So even in the name of Israel, it didn't exist for 2,700 years. They chose Israel as a political and really a religious.
So not a religious, not a religious reason.
Not really.
Not really.
Not really. It's more of a historical reason. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, look, we've been in, here's the point. We've been in this land for 2,700 years. And then if you go back to Abraham, that's actually 3,800 years. And this is part of the problem. Who owns the land?
Mm-hmm.
And the premise is whoever was here first owned the land.
Owned the land.
All right. And so even in choosing Israel, they have made a political statement more than a theological or religious statement.
And Don, what about the, anything else you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it sounds like a minor issue, and I've got no problem with them calling themselves Israel. But the problem that we've been facing, and I went to Israel 12 years ago to, all right, I want to find out what's happening, what's going on. I went back into the West Bank, and nothing that I had heard was accurate.
Wow.
And I began to meet Palestinians, and then I've been to Syria. I went to Syria in 2016 and worked with Christians there. I've been to Lebanon a number of times. I've been to Jordan. I went to see what's actually going on, because you've got this narrative that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. And that's the biggest myth out there.
All right.
They're not a democracy. They're no longer a democracy. They are a Jewish state.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're up against is this large narrative out there that is pushed by Israel and America. Because America supports Israel to the tune of $3.8 billion a year.
And that's something that's something I want to unpack. Can I ask you one question about, because I'm thinking about this town that you and your wife go back to, and it sounds like you consider that to be your home there. You return to that place.
It is. And when I take students, we stay at the hotel.
That's where you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Don, why are the settlements such an issue? The listening audience, I think we all know enough. And if you don't, you can go read about it. But these settlements that surround Jerusalem?
They surround Jerusalem, but there are over 200 settlements. All right. You have Israel, and a lot of people forget that you also have Palestine.
That's right.
So you have Israel, and you have the West Bank, which is the West Bank of the Jordan, and then you have Gaza, which is down on the coast. And so not all of that is Israel. The land has been divided going all the way back to 1917. And one of the worst things, in my opinion, one of the worst things that ever happened in the 20th century was in 1917. It's called the Balfour Declaration. And this was a British diplomat, dude, who made the declaration.
They're good at this. The British are good at this.
Yeah, they really are. And we've gotten good at it too as Americans.
Yes, we have.
That this was going to be the Jewish homeland in 1917. So he's sitting somewhere in the UK and makes this decision, and it becomes a disaster. And so Jews start coming to the land of Palestine, and they start settling there. And it's kind of interesting. They get along very well all the way up until about 1944, 1945, 1946. It was very diverse. Hmm. It was a majority Palestinian. And they get along very, very well. And it's after World War II when you get this great influx of Jews coming from Europe.
Yes.
Who had survived the Holocaust, all right? Well, the land had been divided by Britain. It's called the British Mandate. So you got the Balfour Declaration, you got the British Mandate, and then you got the 1967 Six-Day War, and in that war, Israel got some of Syria, they got some of the Sinai. Honestly, Doug, a lot of this is about grabbing land.
Yeah.
And let me say at this point, I've been accused of being anti-Semitic. I'm not anti-Israel. I'm definitely not anti-Jewish at all. But we need to admit that there is a difference between being Jewish and being Israeli.
That's right.
It's not the same thing.
That's right.
So you can be Jewish. And in fact, I'm a member of an organization called Jews for Peace in the Middle East. And there are many, many Jews who really have a problem with what's happening to the Palestinians, because to them, they see this as a rejection of what they've been through themselves in the Holocaust.
Yes.
Of course, which was atrocious. And I do not deny the Holocaust. 6 million Jews were obliterated by, you know, Hitler and his maniacal machine. The Holocaust was horrible and really unspeakable. I agree with that. What we need to understand, though, the Holocaust cannot be used as an excuse to steal people's homes and land and to strip their identity and to steal their identity and to shoot children at 250 yards with professional snipers to bulldoze their homes. You've got to be really, we have to nuance this. And so when I say I'm not being anti-Semitic, I'm saying that I support Israel. And if we go too far the other way, there will be a genocide against the Israelis.
Yes.
And not all Israelis are Jews, and not all Jews are Israelis. And so here comes another myth down the road, and that myth is, if you're pro-Palestinian, you're anti-Semitic. And then they tie you back to Hitler and so forth and
yes.
so on.
Yes.
And it's not true, mostly because Semitic, and I'm going to go graduate, as I tell my students, I'm going to go graduate on you here. Semitic is a linguistic category. It's a language category. It is not a genetic category. Semitic means you speak a Semitic language. So Hebrew is Semitic, but guess what else is too?
I think
Arabic.
I know.
Yes. Arabic and Aramaic. And so to pull in this whole idea of Semitic and to equate it with anti-Jewish is a myth. The Palestinians are Semitic. The Jews are Semitic. So I do not support what Israel is doing against the Palestinians, and I think it's actually anti-Semitism on their part.
So Israel has, is it a true statement that Israel has weaponized the term anti-Semitic?
Absolutely. And you see this. There are even states in the United States who are making laws that you have to sign a statement that you support Israel fully. People are not going to believe this, but I mean, this is going on in Georgia. This is going on in different places and states that you must sign a document that you support Israel. How did that happen? And if you don't sign that document, then you're anti-Semitic.
Well, let's ask that question, Don. How did that happen? Because I think then we're getting into another question I have, and so I'll link it to this question. Why are so many American Christians obsessed with modern-day Israel?
All right.
So somehow I think it's connected in that, isn't it? You're signing this document. Because in my mind, Don, even as I listen to you, it helps me differentiate between Israel and Jewish. So
yes.
Is it a fair, so when we say, when you said, and I agree with you, Israel has weaponized the term anti-Semitic, that's heard by most people, at least here in the States, as Israel and Jewish is synonymous.
Yeah.
So that'd be like me saying the Jews have weaponized the term. And it's like, you're saying Israel, who in 1947 decided that's the name they would take on. I mean,
right.
In my mind, it equates to like an Amazon that takes over an industry, and they corporatize, and they commodify something. And so it sounds like that. It's like Amazon moving in and saying,
"That's right.
This is the name we take, and this is how we're going to define it, and whatever." And I think of Amazon, and I don't want to go down that road, but you know the way they've crushed the local grocer, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So really, is that the way we're talking when we say Israel has weaponized this term?
Yeah, absolutely. And I apologize. You asked me a question, and I really, you know, being from Tennessee, I would say I went around the cow barn on that one. But you asked about the settlements.
Yes.
And that's what happened. When the land was divided, the Palestinians had the West Bank. And the Israelis had, west of the West Bank, and they divided Jerusalem in half.
Yes.
East Jerusalem is Palestinian. West Jerusalem is Israeli. All right. The West Bank is Palestinian. You go to Haifa, that's Israel. All right. You go to Ramallah, that's Palestine. Well, in the last 20 years, Israelis have been allowed to come into the West Bank, which was a portion to the Palestinians, and build their own settlements by basically stealing Palestinian land. And of course, what happens is when you steal the land, you steal the resources, the water. Then Israel sets up a checkpoint, and everyone has to go through that checkpoint, and the whole country, Israel Palestine, they have three different colors of license tags. If you have a yellow license tag, you can drive into Israel, you can drive into Palestine, what you can drive wherever you want.
Well, you know, Don, it sounds like I don't know if you watch Handmaid's Tale, but it sounds like Gilead to me.
Yeah.
If you watched Handmaid's Tale, it sounds to me like
it is.
Okay, it sounds like Gilead. So Don, when you say settlement, is it more? It's a neighborhood as opposed to an encampment. I mean, I'm thinking.
Oh no,
is it a neighborhood? Is it developed houses and?
It's beautiful.
Okay. So these are not tents and encampments. Okay, these are neighborhoods that are set up and resourcing the water and resourcing the way you take land in the Northwest and build a subdivision.
That's right, and it's a big subdivision, and so there are now 200 settlements.
Goodness.
And they took some of the best land, and they can do that because they have the guns.
I was going to ask how did they come in and do
that? They have the guns, and America supports Israel to the tune of $3.8 billion a year. There's no other country that we give that much money to. The next country for support down below that is Egypt. And Egypt at this point gets $1.3 billion. Israel gets $3.8 billion. And that is used to set up checkpoints to, if you have a white tag, you're not driving into Israel. If you have a white or a green tag, you're not going in there. They're not going to let you in there. And so, like in Bethlehem, there's a major checkpoint. I always take my students through that checkpoint. Sometimes the Palestinians have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go and stand at that checkpoint, and they don't get through until 8 a.m. to go over into Israel to do their jobs. One of my dear, dear friends, Muhammad, he's a taxi driver. He should be able to drive to a certain section of Jerusalem that belongs to the Palestinians in 30 minutes. But because of the settlements, it takes him 2 hours to get there.
Wow.
Because he's got to go he can't go into any of those settlements. They're guarded by AR-15s and drones and so forth and so on. And then he can only go into certain places.
And Don, this has happened for, let's say, for Muhammad, if he was driving a cab for a while. This happened how many years ago that it literally changed the course of his life?
In the very beginning, he sent me a photo. I don't think this will, people don't know who I'm talking about, but he sent me a photo. I know Muhammad because he's my driver, and he takes us, like, we go into Hebron.
Yeah.
And he takes us there, and just, he's a wonderful human being with three awesome children, and we're good friends. And he sent me a photo 2 weeks ago, and it was prisoners being led blindfolded and shackled. And I said to Muhammad, I was like, why are you sending me this photo? And he goes, I'm number three. And so in 2002, he was arrested, I don't know for what. he was arrested by the Israelis. He was stripped down to his shorts. And he was blindfolded and he was shackled to other Palestinians. And of course, we're on Facebook. I'm not going to ask him. I'll talk to him when I get back there. But what happens, and here's how I put it. It's a land grab. And we're supporting it. And to answer your other question, Doug, Christians support it because it's in some of their theology that
right.
As soon as the third temple is built, Jesus will come back. And so Hagee in San Antonio, you know who I'm talking about, the pastor?
I do.
You know, I mean, it's atrocious because he literally collects millions of dollars in San Antonio, Texas, and sends them to the settlers, to the settlements.
Mm-hmm.
And why doesn't he help the Palestinian Christians? There's a whole community of Christians. There are two Bible colleges in Bethlehem, one Lutheran, one independent. Why doesn't he send that to Palestinian Christians? Village of Taibe, all Christian. Nazareth, you go to Nazareth, you talk about celebrating Christmas. Their whole city is just decorated out for Christmas for a whole week. They have a 100-foot Christmas tree. You know, why are we really crushing Christians in the Middle East and not helping them in the name of Israel? I think it's wrong and it's misguided.
And I know your question, the why question, is not a rhetorical question, even though it definitely makes us think about, I think I interpret the why as, can you believe that they're doing this? Let me ask you the question, and I'm sure that I'm sure there's no simple answer to this. What's the mindset of that? Because I think of racism, and I think of, why didn't you give that job to the black individual who actually had more academic training? And so we ask why, and then we realize that it's not for a lack of intelligence. It's that deep racism that's planted inside of somebody, possibly in the first few years of their life. Why would this individual, this pastor, Haig, I mean, what's the mindset of how you differentiate between the Palestinian Christians and the Israeli? I mean, what's underneath that, Don?
I don't know, Doug. You know, I was raised in fundamentalist Christianity, and I was taught that when Jesus comes back, he'll come back to the Mount of Olives, and the third temple will be built, and this will usher in what is called the millennium, you know, the thousand-year reign of Christ. And so Hagee really actually literally believes this, and so he's helping the Jews build, you know, quote unquote, the third temple so Jesus can come back. I remember hearing sermons that 1947, it was a year of prophecy because Israel now is finally coming back. And if Israel comes back, then Jesus will come back. And so this is really apocalyptic theology. This is fundamentalist theology.
Okay.
And so they're supporting Israel, not for political reasons. They're supporting Israel because they see this as part of their Christianity. This is part of their eschatology, that Christ will finally come back. And so...
So this is cooperating with ushering in the return of Christ. So,
right.
I would assume that they would see anything other than that is actually creating a barrier to Christ's return, and so we've got to support the coming back and remove all the barriers and cooperate and be good Christians and all of that. Don, there's one question that's lurking in my mind and I want to go back to. It's a historical question, but I think it's very pertinent. When you said in 1947, these dispersed Jews who migrated to Israel to find a home,
yes.
And there was a large population of them, and I mean, these are bewildered human
That's
beings.
Right. They were dispossessed,
they were battered, and
right.
dispossessed, and looking for a home and nomadic, if you will. What was their mindset about coming into a place? Did they come in with the mindset of this has always been ours, or we're going to? I mean, did they usher in? I want to be careful here, but did they usher in kind of this Amazon takeover? Or was that something that it was hijacked?
I
what was the mindset there?
I don't know.
Do you think?
It's a great question that I'd have to crawl into so many minds to try to answer that. But let me try to answer it this way. All right. And then I'll leave it up to other people's interpretation. For the longest time, I was very good friends with many of the Israelis, and I still am friends with a number of Israelis. And I took a group of students over there 4 or 5 years ago, and one of my friends who is an Israeli, she met us for our final dinner there in Jaffa, which is old Joppa, where, you know, Jonah went. And she brought me a gift. And the gift, she works with a university there in Israel. And their geography department, is that right? Something like geography department. They were giving old maps away, and they were just getting rid of things, all right? Well, they got rid of a 1946, all right? Now listen to that date. They got rid of a 1946 map. And they already have the highways. They already have the interstates. They don't call them interstates. They already have the roads. You look at that map in 1946. This is not 1947. In 1946, and I could, you know, if you want me to, I'll snap a photo when I get home and I can show you that. But in 1946, they already had the land mapped out.
Okay.
And these are Zionists, you know, and I think it's very important to understand that there's a big difference between a Zionist and an Israeli. Because not all Israelis are Zionists, but this whole idea of...
Yeah, why don't you define that for
us? Yeah, the Zionist, Zion is another name for Jerusalem. It's another name for the mountain, not the Temple Mount, but the mountain in Jerusalem as Mount Zionist. Well, the Zionists are the ones who want to create a Jewish state.
Okay.
All right? And then there are Christian Zionists like Hagee in San Antonio who... we call them Christian Zionists because they want to help Israel establish a Jewish state. And so the crazy thing is, here's the thing, Doug. Most Christians who support Israel are really kind of through the back door racist, because to them, the Jews will finally come to know the truth and they will accept Jesus as their Savior. And so you're familiar, you and I are old enough, even though we're only 28 years old, we're old enough to know the organization Jews for Jesus. You heard of that before? It's this whole idea. I mean, it's kind of interesting. These Christian Zionists.
Is that the Messianic Jew? Is that the Messianic Jew?
It's kind of different. No, it could be.
Okay, kind of different.
But Messianic Jews are folks who still believe in keeping the Old Testament. They worship on Saturday. But they consider themselves Christian. But I forgot where I was going.
Jews for Jesus.
Sorry. Yeah, no, it's okay. The whole thing of Jews for Jesus. And so it's interesting that a lot of Christians who are pro-Israel, Notice I did not say pro-Jewish, because I am pro-Jewish.
Yes. Yeah.
I am pro-Semitic.
Yes.
Those who are pro-Israel are pro-Israel, and through the back door, they're pro-Israel because they think they'll finally see the truth and they'll finally accept Jesus as the Messiah. And I heard a woman, a settler, lecture last March 2020. And she said that this is one of the major problems that Jews and Israelis have with American Christians is we are secretly trying to convert them. And she's kind of right.
Oh, yeah, and I'm thinking, and not always secretly, right?
No, it's not always secretly at all. Yeah, in that particular group.
Unabashedly.
Yeah, and so that to her, it was really interesting. And this was the first trip I took with a different organization, because my someone requested that I do it, and I did it for someone else. And this organization is very, very evangelical, conservative Christian, and they're very pro-Israel. And I took 21 students with me on this trip. And one of the things that they had to explain to the leaders is, don't evangelize. They just drilled it again and again, because American Christians, a lot of them, you know, you evangelize. Okay, I don't have anything against that. But it's this whole idea, once again, that the Jews are wrong because they reject Jesus. So we're going to support them, but the reason why we're supporting them is because it fits our eschatology, but then also secretly, they're going to finally come to Jesus.
Yeah.
And if you think,
and you know, if somebody, yeah, go ahead.
No, you think it's like, oh, come on, Hudson, you know, you're crazy. Well, I may be crazy, but like, I mean, you read Hagee's books and he writes this stuff. My parents love them to death. They're amazing people. They despise what I put on Facebook, because they believe that this is God's chosen people.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And that the land belongs to them, and it doesn't matter if the Palestinians lose their homes, if they're bulldozed, if they're shot in the eye, if they're shot in the back, if their leg is shot off, this is God's plan. The Jews are God's people.
That's right.
They're
That's
God's
right.
chosen people. And I had somebody on Facebook got on there, and she's like, I hate to tell you, I love you, but, you know, they're God's chosen people. And I was like, well, you know, okay, you better go back and read Romans 9-11, because if you're a Christian, Paul says that all Christians are now God's chosen people, that Jews are the root, and we are now the branches, we are the tree, and the whole Judeo-Christian, this is Paul, whole Judeo-Christian view takes in this idea that we're all God's chosen people. All Christians now are God's chosen people. And I got really sarcastic. I know this will shock you. I got really sarcastic with her, and I said, when I come back to East Tennessee, and she's a friend of mine, I was like, you know, I'm God's chosen person, and God told me that I could have your farm, and I want your farm.
Yeah.
I'm God's chosen person. I want your farm. I especially want your tractor and your ride mower. And so when I come back, I get to take whatever I want because I'm God's chosen people, blah, blah, blah.
That's right.
All right. So you take in the whole idea. Do I reject that they're God's chosen people? Not at all. But so are Christians, according to Paul. Does that give me the right to go over as a Christian and a God's chosen person? And in some ways, if I'm a child of Abraham, that's my homeland too. Do I have the right to go over there and bulldoze people's houses and steal them? And this is This is why Sheikh Jarrah, and this is why we're probably talking.
I was just going to ask you, why is that the lightning rod currently? What's the match that ignited this issue worldwide about Sheikh Jarrah?
Part of it is cell phones.
Would you, for the listening audience, would you, and for myself as well, would you tell us about Sheikh Jarrah?
Yeah, okay. Sheikh Jarrah is a Palestinian village in East Jerusalem. Okay, so by UN standards, resolution number 242, this belongs to the Palestinians. And plus, their ancestors have been living there for 100 to 200 years at least. So this is a Palestinian village, and settlers are coming in now and saying, I'm God's chosen people. This is our land. And I mean, you've probably seen the videos of settlers coming to the Palestinian homes and saying, we're going to take your home. You need to get out.
And
here's the thing. Here's cell phones. Cell phones and internet have changed the game. The Israeli apologist used to be able to get away with this narrative of, you know, they're really not that oppressive. They're not really doing all these different things. And all of a sudden, you've got settlers who go on and then people are taping them, you know. Big guy shows up, big Jewish guy settler. He's like, I'm going to take your home. You need to leave. I'm going to take your home. It showed people just showing up and like even the police and the army, they show up and they drag these families and children and old people out of their own homes and give them to these Jewish settlers. And
Don, how do you, I really must ask, when you're there, I don't know if you've ever witnessed that, but I mean, how do you hold yourself together?
I don't know.
How do these people that you go live in their homes, in this hometown, if you will, that you and your wife visit? I mean, how does a human being, how do you hold yourself together in that space?
I don't know, Doug, because it weighs on me heavily. And my wife and I have decided that we're just not going to go back that much. It's too much stress. And I hate to say that because I'm a privileged American who gets to, you know, fly around the world, blah, 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 you know, privileged white guy who's not losing his home.
Yeah. You can leave when you want to.
Yeah. And I have all this freedom, but these are my friends, and they're terrified, they can't post things because they'll be arrested. And I mean, Israel imprisons children. I forget what the number is. It's I shouldn't say a number, but anywhere between 300 to 600 children are in jail right now without charges. And so I don't know. The way I hold myself together, and my wife's like, you know, you've got to settle down. You've got to calm down. And you really shouldn't go over there that much because it's not good for you. But I've had a rifle barrel put in my face twice. Once at Shiloh, and once at Bethel. And just because I kept arguing. And I mean, come on, Hudson. That's stupid. All right. It's too far. You know, you're going to get shot for nothing. So what I've tried to do is this, is do a podcast with you. You know, you're sensitive to this issue. You're open to this issue. My guess is your listeners will also at least be open to this issue. What I've tried to do is channel what I've seen, that in some ways I wish some of the things I'd never seen, because we don't have time to go into this, but I went to Syria, and you would not believe what I saw in Syria and Israel and America and Saudi Arabia are responsible for what happened in Syria.
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, I got story after story. So what I've tried to do is just inform people. I'm pro-Semitic. I'm not against Israel. I am against their policies. I'm pro-Jewish. I love the Hebrew Bible, love the Old Testament. But I'm sorry to put it this way. I'm sounding like my dad now. Right is right and wrong is wrong.
Oh,
in
yes.
in whether it's political or theological, to pull those people out of their homes that they legally own is an atrocity.
Please join us next week for part two of this conversation with Don Hudson.